This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
And I'm Andrew Morantz. In 2015, a filmmaker named Chris Milk gave a TED Talk about a project he created with the United Nations. The project was the story of a Syrian refugee girl named Sidra.
My name is Sidra. I am 12 years old. I am in the fifth grade. I am from Syria in the Daraa province in Khil City.
So it was a virtual reality project. Virtual reality, or VR, it's loosely defined because people are sort of still figuring out what it means in practice, but basically, VR is anything that you can play on a device where it totally takes over your field of vision and it tracks your head movement, so anywhere you look, there's something for you to look at in a full 360 degrees.
I think I was a stronger baby than my brother.
So it's a machine, but through this machine, we become more compassionate, we become more empathetic, and ultimately, we become more human. And that's how I think virtual reality has the potential to actually change the world. Thank you.
So there were some pretty grandiose claims in what he said, but basically, the context for that TED Talk is that there was this huge wave of VR hype that had kind of taken over Silicon Valley and LA. The year before, in 2014, Facebook had acquired a VR company called Oculus for $2 billion.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said the idea is to extend virtual reality capabilities beyond gaming into areas like communication and education. So joining us now is Dan...
When I started reporting on VR earlier this spring, I was trying to find the Orson Welles of VR. And the thing is, that person doesn't exist yet. Because even though the technology is there, the storytelling part is still coming into focus. One person who's been a theorist of this for decades, since before it really even existed, is named Janet Murray. She's a professor at Georgia Tech.
Right now, we're at this really tantalizing moment with VR. We haven't invented the storytelling format that suits this medium. Right now, it's just a technology. That is the equivalent of inventing the movie camera, but inventing the movie camera is not the same thing as inventing the movies.
In the late 90s, Janet Murray had this book called Hamlet on the Holodeck, which sort of became a cult classic in the tech world. The book argued that the future of storytelling was in interactive, immersive narratives, so stories that could include animation or video games or visual art, but it wouldn't be reducible to any one of those things. One team in Brooklyn is making some of the first steps toward that kind of narrative. They're working on this really exciting VR project because it has a computer-rendered environment, but they're putting real people inside it. The project is called Blackout. James George is the creator, the technical director, the executive producer. He sort of does everything.
So we're working on a virtual reality experience that takes place on the New York subway. And in this experience, you're on the subway surrounded by strangers and the train breaks down. And the train drops into darkness and you're surrounded by suspicious murmurs, fear and confusion from people not knowing what's happening.
This is not again.
You realize in that moment that in virtual reality, you can look at the different passengers and actually hear what they're thinking.
Blackout is very much still in development, but even right now, even when the people are blurry and the software is glitchy, it still feels like a cool superpower to be able to turn your head and look at a person and all of a sudden hear their innermost thoughts.
I shouldn't bite my nails. It's disgusting in a train. Have I touched anything? Somebody does definitely smell one here. Or maybe it's just the train.
All of the couples on this subway look exactly alike. There's two people over there that have the same face, just one has facial hair and one doesn't.
You see a homeless person, you never know. The people that have the most don't ever want to give, but the people with the littlest always giving and giving and giving.
Being able to look at someone and hear their thoughts, it's a simple kind of interaction, but it feels very cool in the context of real actors. Most of the things you see in VR that have real actors in them are just pre-recorded 360 video. So it starts playing and you can watch it and it's in all directions around you, but it's the same every time. What Blackout's trying to do is make something with real actors in it that's different depending on where you look or what you do or where you go within that space. VR nerds like to talk about this as the passive versus interactive distinction. I talked to Justin Cohn, who is the founder of the media blog motionographer.com, and he's been covering VR for a long time, and he's gotten very good at explaining the technical stuff.
So what I think people have been searching for, especially in recent years, is some kind of holy grail that unites the best of passive storytelling with the best of interactivity, the things we've learned from video games. So the team behind Blackout is taking some of the first steps around this new united pathway between these two worlds. They are building a world that, like a video game, is fully interactive. It's a world you can walk around, but then they have these pre-recorded, three-dimensional, real people that they've captured and put into this experience. And that is much more like filmmaking, right? These are actors who are performing, and it may or may not work. I don't know. It may or may not be what they think it's going to be, but one thing's for sure, it's headed the right direction.
So part of what the Blackout team has developed in order to do this is a software and filmmaking technique called DepthKit.
DepthKit allows you to film in a way where you're catching people from every angle, which means that a viewer is actually the camera person. You're literally walking around inside of this movie. We think of it as a piece of science fiction software.
Okay, so you're not literally inside the movie, but you are literally walking around these images of these actors. And in order to do that, you need to surround these actors with multiple cameras, and then you need to combine those shots into this full 3D stitching of that person. And then when you have this full 3D rendering of the person, then you plop her into this interactive world, and then the audience can walk around her and she'll still look real.
This is hugely important to Hollywood because Hollywood wants to create these experiences that extend the intellectual property they already have, right? So how cool would it be if in virtual reality you could interact with a live action, you know, Rey from the new Star Wars movie?
I'm fine with passive experiences. I don't mind just sitting back and watching something, like, you know, I think Citizen Kane is pretty good and that's totally passive. But if you do want interactivity, it's much easier to do it with computer animation. As soon as you start to use real people, it gets tricky. So the Blackout team is doing these things with technology like DepthKit that have never been done before. And from the outside, that seems really cool. But the problem is there's no precedent for the kind of storytelling they want to do. They have to have all these really difficult internal conversations to try to figure out how to tell the story. They have these viewers who will never have seen VR before. So how do you teach someone to watch VR as a form at the same time that you're letting them experience your particular story?
The genuine thing we want to get these people to do is move through the space. And moving through the space becomes a metaphor for overcoming suspicion. So
their original idea had been, at a certain point, a bunch of subway dancers called the Waffle Crew. They were going to jump up and freeze in midair.
Here we go, folks. Do not blink your eyes. You might miss something.
As a viewer, when you see that, you start to get the sense that you're in this altered reality where all kinds of weird things are about to happen, like hearing passengers' thoughts. But when I visited them, they weren't sure anymore that the freezing in midair thing was the best way to do that transition.
Right. So my worry is, like, the part with the Waffle Crew is very, like, performative. And learning the rules could be I don't know, there are ways we could help them without being so on the nose, where there's different versions of when you like enter a portal and you begin to learn the rules. Mm-hmm. And this is just very often happens in children's books or in sci-fi. I mean, and I think we could just think about what we want to do for that. And I guess for me, because I always would prefer to do something that is a little more slower and exploratory, like,
you're right.
But they could figure this out, and it could be like, and then they'll feel like they figured it out.
Yeah.
And that would be so wonderful.
That would be a total success if that works. It's just
hard. That always felt really clunky to me. And
dismantling. I believe you. I trust you. I know. I want to listen. It's just dismantling so much of what we've been building that it's frustrating for me.
At some moments, the people on the Blackout team are really focused on pushing technical boundaries, and other times that all goes out the window and all they want to talk about is how to tell a good story. And that distinction can get blurred by all the VR rhetoric.
There's so much conversation around things like VR that are like, oh, you just get in there and you just feel empathy for your fellow human being. And it's not really like that. It's a very strange, in a lot of ways, isolating experience. It's just you, right? Like, you're on your own with a headset strapped to your face.
There's been a lot of talk about VR as an empathy machine, and it's usually focused on things that are happening very far away.
Yeah.
And this is like, we're literally across the street from the subway
right
now.
The sort of suggestion is that we can do a lot to understand those people and to take a moment to give them the benefit of the doubt. And Blackout is a moment where we create this paused time where you actually get to do that.
And do you think that is possible because VR is an empathy machine or because you guys are good storytellers?
Hopefully the second one. I mean, honestly, it's hard to say that it is anything. It is a weird thing that you put on your face is the safe description of what it is currently.
When he says it's just a thing you put on your face, I think what he's talking about is there's a difference between the hardware and what you use that hardware for. VR technology is already here. There's a huge amount of money being invested in it. That's not going anywhere. But the Blackout team also, at the same time, has to solve a different problem: how to tell stories in this new medium. And personally, that's much more interesting to me. Not just that we can make newer and cooler computer platforms, but that this can become a whole new way to make stories and art. It might take a few years, but I'm really curious to see what the Orson Welles of VR comes up with.
That's Andrew Moranz from The New Yorker's editorial staff.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.